Hi, this is Tim Rideout, episode number 0238 of the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder is coming at you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0238. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet Ari Mizell, the author of Less Doing, More Living.
It's about achieving the things that you want to achieve. And in a lot of people's lives, in most people's lives, they feel like there's something that's often holding them back from that, whether they realize it or not. And that thing can be knowledge or time or money or stress or an illness. There's all sorts of things. And basically, that prevents us from getting to do the things that we want to do.
Jaden Sterling is the author of The Alchemy of True Success. His tips can help even when it comes to trying to win contests.
The steps to winning things like a lottery or a door prize or anything like that is something that the age-old alchemists knew years and years and years and years ago, and we've forgotten it. You know, we don't talk about some of these steps, but it's also a way that people can literally manifest anything that they desire.
Dennis Hoff, the owner of the Moonlight Bunny Ranch in Nevada, explains how two of his ladies of the evening got to have their picture taken with Bill Clinton at a charity event.
We walked down to the front of the stage where he was, and he stopped for a minute to say hello to a couple people. And Barbie Girl came up and said, Mr. President, I'm Barbie Girl from the HBO show, Cat House, and I'm a Bunny Ranch girl, and I'm your biggest fan. Can I get a picture? And he says, come on, girls. And so the girls went up there, and he was generous enough to take that wonderful photo. And then Ava said, thank you, Mr. President. And he said, it's always a pleasure taking pictures with pretty girls.
And we have lots and lots and lots of stuff. And, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later, the person who told you this was show number 0238, was Tim Rideout, a Montreal composer who works in film and TV. He's currently doing orchestrations for composer Mark Bell on the film Brick Mansions, which is the last film from the late actor Paul Walker. Thank you very much, Tim, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program. By the way, you can check out Tim's website. You'll find it on the What's On page for this show, which, as you heard Tim say, is show number 0238, on my website at thestufffile.com. And, of course, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. Well, this is a program, by the way, that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Let's get right to the stuff, shall we? John R. Morales, age 41, has been sentenced to 16 years in prison in Texas after pleading guilty to drug charges. Now, he was found to be in possession of 1,000 marijuana plants and 27 weapons, including a grenade launcher, and was caught after being pulled over for speeding. Drug trafficking was Morales' second career. His first was as an actor, and he's best known for portraying McGruff, the crime dog, famous for urging citizens to take a bite out of crime. Yeah, well, now he's been bitten. Anyway, more than 20 police vehicles in a Dallas, Texas SWAT team went to the apartment building where a woman had fled with injuries. Two schools were on lockdown. There were armed personnel vehicles, ambulances, fire trucks, and an incident command post. Media helicopters were urged to back off. Do what's right. We are not going away, an officer wielding a loudspeaker shouted at the apartment door. But the suspects, believed to be armed and possibly to have a teenager with them, did not emerge. The standoff continued for 6 hours. Finally, police burst into the apartment. It was empty. Yeah, probably except for the crew from Candid Camera, I'm guessing. Walter Williams, age 78, was in hospice care at his home in Holmes County, Missouri. A family member called the coroner to say Williams had stopped breathing. Coroner Dexter Howard stopped by, took Williams' pulse and declared him dead, and then helped the mortician put him into a body bag and take him to a funeral home. As the men prepared to embalm Williams, they noticed movement in the body bag. They called for paramedics. Williams was alive. I asked the coroner what happened, said Holmes County Sheriff Willie March, and the only thing he could say is that it's a miracle. Howard is not a doctor. Coroners in Mississippi are elected to the position and don't even have to have medical training to be elected. So, the actual miracle is that it hasn't happened before. When Chaz Seal, age 17, packed his lunch before heading to Livingston High School in Houston, Texas, he was in a hurry running late, says his mom, Christy Seal. In his hurry, Chaz allegedly mistook a can of beer for a can of soda and threw it into his lunch. When he realized his mistake, he gave the unopened can to a teacher. I gave it to the teacher thinking I wouldn't get into trouble. Well, he got into trouble. The teacher gave the beer to the school's principal, who then suspended Chaz for 3 days and sent him to an alternative school for 2 months. The principal of Livingston High School followed proper LISD administrative procedures and protocol, the Livingston Independent School District said in a statement. Christie says the punishment is excessive and is appealing the decision. Okay, this is the best way to teach students that honesty is the best policy, unless, of course, you're under the authority of obliviates. This is just another zero-tolerance case gone mad. Is there anybody who is seemingly in charge who actually makes a decision anymore, or are people just blindly following orders, regardless of what the outcome is? I don't know. Anyway, when a homeowner in New York had a big pile of wood furniture and other bulk refuse in front of their home on trash day, it was up to sanitation worker Lenworth Dixon, age 56, to load it up and put it into the trash truck. The apologetic homeowner gave Dixon the $20 tip. That detail was apparently revealed by a secret camera on the trash truck, and it's a violation of city ethics rules for a civil servant to take a gratuity for doing their jobs. Dixon was fined $1,500 and then forced to retire after 24 years on the job. Wow. Well, this sounds like another asinine story of zero tolerance of another kind. $1,500 fine and forced to retire after a quarter of a century. I'm usually the last person to say, get me a lawyer, but I think it really applies here. But there is also another issue at play here. Under what circumstances would you need to put a hidden camera on a garbage truck? Exactly what kinds of crimes are you expecting to capture on trash cam? That's what I'd like to know. Weird in so many ways. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Entrepreneur Ari Mysel is the author of Less Doing, More Living. It's a philosophy to help you streamline your life. Ari joins us on the line right now from New York. Hi, Ari.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thanks for being on the program with us. Well, first of all, when you say more living, because, you know, living means different things to different people, what exactly do you mean?
Well, I really, for me, it's about achieving the things that you want to achieve. And in a lot of people's lives, in most people's lives, they feel like there's something that's often holding them back from that, whether they realize it or not. And that thing can be knowledge or time or money or stress or an illness. There's all sorts of things. And basically, that prevents us from getting to do the things that we want to do.
Okay, so when did you reach the realization that, you know, what you're saying in your book and the way you're living your life, when did the aha moment go off for you?
Well, it was one particularly bad night in the hospital, actually. I had been diagnosed with Crohn's disease a couple years earlier and was very, very sick. I was taking an inordinate amount of medicine, and those were giving me all sorts of different side effects, and I was at a very low point in my life. And I was in the hospital this one night waiting to either have surgery or not, or die, or I didn't know what was going to happen, basically, and I had this realization that something had to change. So I got out of the hospital, fortunately, the next day, and after I spiked 105-degree fever for no explicable reason, started thinking about how I could attack these issues, and I started this long journey of self-tracking and self-experimentation, and after about 4 months was off my medicine and starting to feel better. But I wasn't doing great. I was just doing better. And I realized that stress was such a big component of what was going on with my illness and people's lives in general, that in order to attack that, I developed a system of productivity called Less Doing, with the goal of helping people optimize, automate, and outsource everything in their lives in order to be more effective, reclaim their time and their minds, and do the things that they want to do.
Okay, so what is it, do you think, about the human psyche that we always, because your story, while it's unique to you, is not necessarily unique. It seems to be we all have to reach this point of no return before we realize what's really important or what's really successful in our lives.
Absolutely. And, you know, I'm glad that you actually said that it's not unique to me, because that was kind of the point, is stress affects everybody in some way or another, and everybody can deal with it in better ways, I think, than they often do. So it could be a car crash. It could be cancer. It could be a loved one dying. Any of these things are kind of a wake-up call. And I think that there's two things that happen. One, as humans, we kind of tend to focus on the negative, and I'm pretty sure that's a defense mechanism that we've just developed over the years. You know, you don't have to worry about the flower that was growing next to you, but the lion that might walk by, that could be an issue. So we tend to focus on the negative and to keep ourselves safe. So that's one thing. And I think that negativity draws a lot of people in, and a lot of people's work is a negative thing for them, or family situations. There's lots of negativity that just happens around us, whether it doesn't matter how good your life is, and we tend to focus on those things. So you get in these ruts, and you don't look around, and you lose self-awareness. Compound that with the fact that there's just too much going on in everybody's lives, with responsibilities and bills to pay and things they want to do and relationships to maintain. So you just create this little microcosm where we can't see what's actually happening, what effect we are having on our environment, what effect our environment is having on us, and we lose that self-awareness. So self-awareness and tracking is actually a very big part of what I do.
Do you concern yourself or worry about the fact that, you know, what you are espousing, while it all makes great sense, might work better on paper than in theory? And the reason why I bring that up is you talk about using modern technology to make life easier for everyone's daily lives. And it to me, it harkens back a little bit to post-war 20th century, when all new appliances was going to make the housewife's day a lot easier. And we know that really wasn't the case.
Yeah, I think, yeah, my wife would probably agree with you on that. She spends a lot of time cleaning because she's very particular. It's a very good question. And I have to say that there's a lot more framework and sort of philosophy and approach to my method than the actual technology. The technology certainly makes it easier, and I recommend all sorts of specific websites and apps and things, but there is a very strong underlying framework of how you approach this stuff. And just that three-part thing that I mentioned about optimizing, automating, outsourcing is something that does not require any technology to work, and it's a really good way of approaching problems. And if I could explain that real quick, it's that whenever you have a problem, whenever there's a challenge, whatever it is, you have to optimize it first. And that really means breaking it down, looking at what the actual problem is, identifying the different issues and steps so that you can come up with a plan of attack. The automation is where you're looking at ways that you can put systems in place that are kind of the mindset of set it and forget it. Now, of course, that could be technology where you're using software or some sort of process, or it could be a person, but it really doesn't have to be. It's just sort of that if something here happens, then this is what happens after that. And honestly, that could be in your own mind, where you train yourself over time to learn that if I'm presented with a situation, this is how I respond to it. And you remove that decision fatigue that happens in that case. And then the final step is outsourcing, which a lot of times I don't even get there because I'm able to automate most of the stuff. But if you do get there and you have to outsource, then you're looking at other people, other things. And outsourcing can be as simple as having a spouse help you take care of your kids. That's outsourcing. You know, so it really breaks down to a framework.
Now, you started businesses at a very young age. Would you consider yourself a type A personality?
Yes, absolutely. A for Ari. I am definitely a type A personality, and I started my first company. I was 12. I started two others before I graduated high school. And I either have a type A personality or I just have a really hard time focusing.
Okay. And the reason why I ask the question is I'm just wondering if you find when you, because I know you do talks, you're a speaker at TEDx and you're an efficiency consultant. Do you find sometimes it's difficult to get through to type A personalities? Because a lot of times, let's be honest, they're control freaks.
Yes, you know, it's so funny that I'd say that the majority of my clients are the type A's. And dealing with that control issue, I have found the most successful way to deal with that is to start very small. So I love using virtual assistants, and I love recommending virtual assistants to people to try. If nothing else, it's an educational process for you in terms of how to effectively delegate something. But when you have these people who have control issues, I'll have them start with the smallest, most insignificant thing, like calling a store to find out if they have something in stock. You know, something that has no value or bearing on them, but it's something that even if it took them 45 seconds to do it, it still requires this sort of gear shift mentality where they have to change out of what they're doing and then change back to what they're doing to do something that it's just really not an efficient use of their time. So you start very, very small, and then you build up from there and build up trust. But the truth is if you're saving someone a minute and you're saving someone 3 minutes, 5 minutes, it all adds up, and it's very helpful.
Your book, Less Doing, More Living, who do you see as your prime reader? And the reason why I asked that question, I'm assuming you don't think it's your book is in case of an emergency, break glass. This is not a situation where you want somebody to read your book when they're already overwhelmed. I'm assuming you'd like to see them read this book earlier in the process of their lives.
Yes, of course. But, you know, as you said, people sort of have to have a reason to have this come up at some point. And they often do. You know, a lot of people are already seeking this kind of thing, and they want to improve and they want to be more efficient. But yeah, a lot of people do find that moment where they really just have to finally settle down and do it. And, you know, email is a great example of that. I have a lot of people who need to get to like 10,000 emails in their inbox and overload before they'll even look at doing something about it. And it's never too late. And, you know, in the name of efficiency, the book is 108 pages long, so you could probably read it in about an hour and a half and start implementing stuff right away.
The website you have is lessdoing.com. What will people find when they go to the website?
Well, so on Less Doing, that's my main information source for everything. I have a podcast that I do on a regular basis. I have the book. I do my own writing, of course, and sometimes we'll do guest posts. But all my information is there, the new information, all my coaching services, and also my online courses and everything else that I kind of put out there. I try to put as much of this information out there as possible.
So life is good?
Life is great. I have three young boys, and my wife and I are a really great team, and yeah, life is good.
Excellent. The book is called Less Doing, More Living, written by Ari Mysel. Ari, I thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Well, thank you so much for talking to me.
Ari Mysel, author of Less Doing, More Living. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0238, and you'll find the links to Ari's website, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander Show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's The Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of The Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick, if you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands, just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
This is your safe haven from the hard news of the day. The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's radio for your happy place.
And still to come in the program, we'll talk to the author of The Alchemy of True Success. Plus, we will have a visit with Dennis Hoff, the owner of the Moonlight Bunny Ranch in Nevada. He's always a hoot to talk to. There's also an idiot of the day coming your way and much more Stuff File news here on a program also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Let's get right back to the stuff, shall we? People around Sanford, Florida called 911 to report a military vehicle driving without headlights, dragging a construction barrel, and ignoring red lights. Police eventually apprehended Jose Quinones, age 19, who had allegedly stolen the 5-ton Humvee from a new Army Reserve training center in town. Quinones was very confused, mumbled, and could barely stand, a sheriff's office spokesperson said. A marijuana cigarette was found in the Humvee. According to deputies, Quinones climbed a 7-foot fence surrounding the facility. There was not 24-hour security or cameras at the training center. We did have all the security measures in place that the military requires, the battalion's operation officer said, apparently with a straight face. Here we are in the middle of a community in Sanford and not behind the walls of a military base. This setup made us a little bit more vulnerable, another officer explained. But we are doing everything we can to strengthen our posture here to prevent this from happening again in the future. So, a guy who was as high as a kite managed to break into a military installation by scaling a 7-foot-tall fence and steal a military vehicle. Do you feel well protected now, folks of Sanford? Huh? Do you? Robert McKevitt, age 27, just wanted a candy bar from a vending machine. He put a dollar, pushed the button for a 90-cent Twix bar, and watched as the bar got stuck on the spiral hook. Oh, we've all been there, haven't we? I was like, oh man, said McKevitt. So I put in another dollar, and then it wouldn't do anything. He banged and rocked the machine, and when that didn't knock out the chocolate bar and shake it loose, he reportedly took things to the next level. Since he was working in Polaris Industries' warehouse in Milford, Iowa, there was a forklift available. McKevitt allegedly used the forklift to lift the machine and drop it to the ground several times, knocking 3 candy bars into the bottom where McKevitt retrieved them. He was fired 5 days later. McKevitt denies the allegations and says he just used the forklift to put the machine back in place after he shook it. That machine was trouble, he said. They fired me, and now I hear they have all new vending machines there. Well, yeah. I mean, somehow the old ones were all smashed up by a forklift. You know? Seriously. Police in Florida say they arrested a man who allegedly engaged in a sex act with a dog in his yard in full view of shocked neighbors. And it takes a lot to shock people in Tampa, apparently. Tampa police said witnesses flagged down officers and told them that Bernard Marcinek, age 57, was committing a sex act with a pit bull in his yard and ignoring the pleas of neighbors begging him to stop. Police say that Bernard was inside his house when officers arrived and questioned him. Officers and Hillsborough County Animal Services executed a search warrant on the home and discovered a gun and ammunition inside the house. Bernard was arrested on felony charges of aggravated animal cruelty and 2 counts of being a felon in possession of a firearm. He was also charged with a misdemeanor count of sexual activity involving animals. The officers from Animal Services seized 8 pit bulls, 8 pit bulls from Bernard's home. Animal cruelty, yes. Stupid, yes. Sick, oh, definitely, yes. But, you know, having sex with a pit bull also sounds quite dangerous. I suspect he's not going to be a person people are going to mess with when he's in jail. Once they hear this story, nuh-uh, he's on his own. Yeah. Reuben James Turner III, who is 30, was arrested for first-degree criminal mischief, second-degree trespassing, and unlawful entry into a motor vehicle after he allegedly climbed into the back of a marked police car in Portland, Oregon, and fell asleep. When he awoke, he found he was locked in, and police say he tore out the seats trying to escape. Turner spent the night in the car and was finally found by an officer who noticed something strange about the vehicle parked in the precinct lot. A word written in the fogged up back window. It was "help" written backwards. Well, you know, I have a feeling he's going to get an even warmer place to sleep now. Yeah. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, Francis Wadsworth Jones' jewelry design show, called Heaven Sent, at the Museum of London, runs until April, should you want to, you know, get there to make it, with centerpiece brooches that resemble bird droppings. Why, she was asked, would a woman want to wear jewelry suggesting that a pigeon soiled her lapel? The stain is very intimate, said the artist. It's something that you wouldn't want, and you're turning it into something beautiful. Wadsworth Jones's pieces have sold for as much as the equivalent of $4,000. Yeah, wow. Another classic case of selling something to people who have more dollars than cents. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, shall we? Yes, indeedy. Are you one of those people who never win anything? Would you have no luck whatsoever if you didn't have bad luck to count on? Well, Jaden Sterling shares some of the secrets of good fortune. He's the author of The Alchemy of True Success, and he joins us via Skype to Skype communications from British Columbia. Hi, Jaden.
Hi, Peter. How are you?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks for being on the program with us. Now, I know your book isn't all about winning raffles and door prizes and sports bets and the like, the book being, again, The Alchemy of True Success, but it's something you do touch on. So are there tricks to doing winning events like this?
You know, there absolutely are. And the steps to winning things like a lottery or a door prize or anything like that is something that the age-old alchemists knew years and years and years and years ago, and we've forgotten it. You know, we don't talk about some of these steps, but it's also a way that people can literally manifest anything that they desire.
Okay, so I understand there are four steps to winning.
There are.
What are those four steps?
Well, we can jump right into it. The first step is going to be that someone needs to be crystal clear about what they desire. So I call that pre-paving the way. And they pre-pave the way by thoughts and intention, because what we know to be true is that when you have a thought, a singular thought directed in a way that is crystal clear, and I mean crystal clear, Peter, you can't have any wavering about it. You have to really know what you desire. And that's the first step to manifesting whatever it is that you want.
Okay, well, a famous story going back years ago is Jim Carrey, before he became famous, when he was still living in Toronto, carried around a fake $10 million check addressed to him. So part of it is the wishful thinking, the motivation behind visualizing something that's going to happen in your future and making that happen?
That's right. And Jim Carrey, you know, when his father passed on, he put that $10 million check in his father's coffin and he said, "Dad, someday this is going to be real." And that kind of conviction, Peter, absolutely, people need to have that. He knew that even though he was in a situation that he wasn't earning $10 million for each film, he was very clear that he would someday. And of course, that definitely came true. So, yes.
What are the other steps?
Okay, the other step is that people need to remove resistance in their thinking. And, you know, this is a huge, huge step, Peter, because a lot of people will say, yeah, I can set my intentions and my goals. But there's a part of them that doesn't believe they're going to achieve it. So the second step is remove resistance. And that creates an opening for the universe to deliver to you whatever it is that you want.
Okay. Step number three.
Step number three is be in a position to receive. You actually have to show up. You know, my wife implemented these steps at our son's hockey game because they have what's called a 50-50. And at every game, as long as you buy tickets, you have an opportunity to win 50% of the money that's collected. And so she did that. And during that time, so she did these exact steps, Peter, step by step. And the third step was the most important because she was the only person left in the stadium during the break. They took a break between the second and third period. And that's when they picked the winning ticket. And it was her ticket. So the third step is be in a position to receive, meaning show up.
Okay. And step number four?
Step number four is be certain and know that you're going to receive this. And that's the huge clincher right there. You have to get to a state of knowing, and a state of knowing is based on a feeling. So it's not enough to think your way to this process, but you have to also know it. And that is found, you know, deep inside of us, that state of knowingness.
I started off by talking about things like raffles and contests and the like, but the reality is the path to your success is a path that you clear yourself. Is it not correct?
That's exactly right. It's what got me to being in the top 1% income earners at age 26 and also a millionaire by age 31 are these exact steps that I've shared with you.
So what makes you different from people you have, from your peers growing up, for instance?
I think the main thing is that I've never questioned my inner guidance. I've always been crystal clear and trusted in the guidance that I received. And we all receive this guidance. I'm sure you do on a daily basis too. The question is, are you following it?
Okay. Speaking of guidance, one of my bugaboos in life has always been, and I know some of them make lovely, lovely people. It's just that in my experience, I didn't meet any of them. So I'm not making a blanket statement, but I did not have love for my high school guidance counselors. None whatsoever. I bring that up only because clearly you are a person who's driven and believes in themselves and in what they can do. What do you say about people, be it externally, that is, you know, beyond your family, or internally, like it within your family group, who will try to discourage you?
Yeah, that's a very good point because, you know, I call those people dream stealers. And when I was younger, I noticed, you know, we grew up on the water in Maryland and we went crabbing a lot of times. So we'd go by the dock and we'd bring our nets and we'd catch these blue shell crabs and we put them in a bucket. And I realized over time that we'd get a bunch of these in the bucket, these crabs. And I'd say to my mom, "Mom, why is it that we don't have to cover the top of this bucket? Because there was never a cover on it." And she said, "Oh, that's simple. That's because as the crabs crawl up to the top, the other ones reach up and grab them back down." And Peter, that always stayed with me. I always remember that. So throughout my life, I've been really cautious to really be careful about who I share my goals and dreams with. And I think that's so important for your listeners is, you know, you don't have to tell everyone what's in your heart and what you want to accomplish in life because actions speak louder than words.
You call them dream stealers. I used to call them dream killers, but I'm not bitter. your book, The Alchemy of True Success, who did you write it for?
I wrote it for everyone who wants something more in life. And that's the audience who I wrote it for. You know, this isn't for the person who's happy with their J-O-B and doesn't want to be any more than that in life. I wrote it for the person who says, "Man, I know there's something more inside of me. I just can't figure out what it is." So I took the very practical approach, mind, body, spirit, laid out in three sections of the book, 12 chapters. It'll change your life.
Now, one of the things you talk about is setting your inner GPS, correct?
Yes.
Just how do you do that?
Well, pretty much based on what we talked about, that's step number one. That's pre-paving the things for your life. So you get crystal clear about what it is that you truly desire. And I mean beyond money, because you have to be able to have a visceral reaction to what it is that you want, meaning there has to be feeling and emotions attached to what you want. it's not enough to want money, because that's, you know, there, you got to look for, money's a means to an end. So you've got to look for, what is it beyond? What will the money do for you? Will it create freedom in your life? Will it allow you to travel around the world? Will it allow you to, you know, be independent? And that's what, that's the key there, is striving for that first, getting clear about that, and the rest falls into place.
Now, one of the things that some people have a problem with is they have, you know, great drive in the beginning. And when I say in the beginning, you know, when they're young, in their 20s, late teens, 20s, even into their early 30s, sometimes you kind of need a reboot, especially in this day and age where it's not a situation where people are going to be going into a career and staying with it for 40 years. People are changing more and more. So do you have to keep reminding yourself that, you know, you should push yourself a little more? In other words, not get too complacent?
You know, it's a very good point. You're right. Gone are the days of going to work for a corporation and staying with that corporation for 40 years and retiring with a pension. Now there's opportunity out there for people to easily move within multiple fields. And I think that, you know, part of the motivation, particularly if it's money, will die out, because you know, you need something stronger than that. So, I would say to those folks to reevaluate or reboot. I love that word that you used. Reevaluate what it is that inspires you and what motivates you and what gets you out of bed in the morning. I mean, literally, what lights your fire? And if you're aligned with that, you'll continue to have tremendous success.
You have a website, which is thewealthquest.com. What will people find when they go there?
Well, they're going to find, my Wealth Mastery Academy. That's where I bring people into British Columbia, and through a series of workshops, I help people develop their wealth mastery muscle, because it is a muscle. It's not enough to learn what it is that you need to do, but you first must become the type of person who can handle the affluence, and that's what we teach at the Academy. So they'll find information about that. They'll also get information regarding my podcast.
I think it's very interesting that you mentioned that it's like a muscle. I think people can visualize and get that, because people know that in order to be in good health, they have to exercise. And that what you're talking about is like a muscle in itself as well, right?
Absolutely. And the more you exercise and develop that muscle, the stronger it gets. And the more, you know, the stronger your guidance system becomes, because you actually follow it. And that's what grows that muscle. It's so powerful.
The book is called The Alchemy of True Success. It's written by Jaden Sterling. Jaden, I thank you very much for being on the program with us.
My pleasure. Thank you, Peter.
Jaden Sterling, author of The Alchemy of True Success. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0238, and you'll find links to Jaden's website, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. I'd like to share a story that shows what a tough job law enforcement officials have protecting our children in today's lawsuit-happy culture. A couple of years ago, a New York teacher who had a run-in with her administrators blurted out a shocking threat in the teacher's lounge. According to reports, she said, and I quote, "If I had a trench coat and a shotgun, it'd be Columbine all over again." End of quote. What an unbelievable thing for a teacher to say. 12 students were killed in the Columbine massacre. She was arrested and arraigned on making terrorist threats. However, a grand jury failed to indict her, and the charges were later dropped. Now she is suing the police department for $6 million. Let's be fair. At the time of her arrest, even her own lawyer was reported as saying she needed medication. How do we expect law enforcement officials to protect our children if they have to constantly worry about being sued like this? Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamerica.org.
Hi, this is Wynonna Judd, and you probably don't think of me as a person with an eating disorder, but here's my truth. Eating disorders are real, and they are not just about losing weight. Eating disorders are the way you feel about your body and the way you treat yourself. For years, I have been a compulsive overeater, and it wasn't until its effects threatened my health, my family, and my career that I finally reached out for help. Recovering from an eating disorder is possible, and I'm living proof. But you have to take the first step, so I urge you to visit nationaleatingdisorders.org.
Yes, You're listening to the Stuff File program. It's the choice of 4 out of 5 dentists. The 5th dentist also listens, but that's just because he follows the crowd. Here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to Dennis Hoff, the owner of the Moonlight Bunny Ranch. Plus, we do indeed have an idiot of the day coming your way. And more Stuff File news here on a program also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, 3 suspects fled with about 30 pieces of jewelry from a burglary at Timothy's Fine Jewelry in Broomfield, Colorado in January, but not before creating a puzzling scene on the surveillance video. Crushing the glass cases with sledgehammers, they moved quickly around the store, all the while constantly telling each other, "I love you, brother!" Yes, love is strange, isn't it? Meanwhile, Christopher Schaefer likely became the first public office holder in the U.S. sworn in as an openly declared Pastafarian, an adherent of the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster, when he took his seat on the town council in Pomfret, New York in January. Schaefer was wearing the traditional Pastafarian religious head covering, which is a colander. You know, the great thing about a democracy is that the people always get the government they deserve. Yes, indeedy. And finally, from the latest episode of When Male Models Attack, after his photographer pointed out that he had a hickey on his neck during a photo shoot in Seattle, a male model flew off the handle by smashing a glass table with his foot and kicking a vase before turning his attentions to the man with the camera. The model was apparently very, very unhappy at being told that the shoot would have to be rescheduled because of his love bite. When he was through dispatching with the table and the glass, the suspect, who was also the victim's business partner, allegedly grabbed the photographer around the neck before punching and choking him. The victim told police that he fears for his life. Now, according to the police report, this was the 3rd time in the last 3 months that the suspect had assaulted the victim, but it's the first time that he was reporting it. Police are continuing to investigate the allegations. You know, a male model should be a little more careful about attacking someone because, as the photographer pointed out correctly, something like a hickey, which is basically a bruise to the skin, is grounds for not continuing with a photo shoot. And I know from my perspective that if you are a model and you've decided that you want to choke and punch me, you might be dealing with a great deal more work-stopping bruising than just simply a hickey. That's all I have to say. Let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program, shall we? Dennis Hoff is the owner of the famed Moonlight Bunny Ranch in Carson City, Nevada. We've had a chance to talk to him on several occasions over the years. This time around, Dennis is here to talk about a recent couple who hooked up for life after only being together for 4 hours, and also a chance encounter with a former U.S. president. I wonder which one. From the Bunny Ranch, it's Dennis Hoff. Hi, Dennis.
Good evening, Peter. It's always fun. We love Canada, and I can't wait to get up there and open up our Bunny Ranch.
Oh, it's a little cold for your Bunny Ranch up here, I think.
I know, but you know what? I guess I'm going to have to get used to that cool weather if I'm going to open up places in Toronto, Montreal, Halifax, and Vancouver. That's my plan.
That's your plan. Wow.
That's the plan.
Are those cities aware of the fact that you're planning on opening up there?
Oh, yeah. They're absolutely aware, and I've done a lot of media, and I'm trying to wait for the weather to change just a touch so I can come up there and start scouting around for locations.
Okay. Well, I want to talk to you about that couple I was mentioning earlier in the introduction. There's a longtime customer picked one of the bunnies out of a lineup recently at the Bunny Ranch, and they were committed to marriage within 4 hours? What's the story?
4 hours. This is unbelievable. A guy's been coming in here 15 years. His name's Rich, and he lives here in northern Nevada. And his fantasy has always been to marry a bunny. And so whenever he comes in here, that's what he talks about. That when he goes into the room to party with them and pays them, that's what he talks about. And so we always thought it was just a fantasy that's what he wanted to do. So now Rich comes in and hooks up with Holly Brooks, a girl that worked for us, and a porn girl. And next thing I know, they're coming and say, he wants to marry me, and I think I want to do it. Nobody's ever asked me to marry them. I said, well, why don't you guys go on a honeymoon first and charge him whatever you're going to charge him. And so they went on a 4-hour honeymoon, and they found out they were compatible. And so now they're going to start planning the wedding. So we just went along with it thinking, this is never going to happen. This is all just a fantasy. And all of a sudden, Valentine's Day, they went out and got married.
Wow. Now, as you say, this is a customer who's been coming to you for 15 years. So even though he'd been a regular customer at the Bunny Ranch, he and Holly had never met before?
Never met before. He came in here and he met her and liked what he saw and used his typical I want to get married routine. And she decided she wanted to do that. And so they're now, she packed up her stuff. They're happily ever after in Reno. And if any of your listeners would like to get involved in the pool, it's a $10 pool just to pick the date that she'll be back to the ranch.
She'll be back. So you don't think this is going to last? Is that what you're saying?
Well, it's built on a fantasy. And, I mean, they knew each other for just a short period of time. I don't know how it's going to last too long. Seems kind of crazy to me.
Okay. Now, you say, again, 15 years he's been going there. So is it quite possible that he had asked previous bunnies to marry him, but this is the first one who's actually said yes?
Every girl. He's asked everyone. And that was his M.O. He liked to ask all the girls, and they would play about it and go back and forth. Well, let me think about it, and we'll just date for a while. And they went back and forth like that until now. She just said yes. And they went out and bought a ring and scheduled it and got married. And the girl here in the office with me, Willow, knew her very, very well. I knew her very well.
How old is the groom?
The groom, I think, is 56, if I remember correctly. And I think she's 30.
Well, he's the same age I am. There you
go. Look at her pictures. Go to bunnyranch.com and look at her pictures. And also look at Willow. On there, W-I-L-O-O-W.
Okay. Now, I understand that a famous TV personality actually officiated at this wedding.
Yes, and I didn't go to the wedding. I wasn't invited. I guess they didn't invite anybody that she'd slept with or something, so I didn't get to go. But Dan Haggerty, I hear that Dan, who's our good friend, Dan has done many weddings here at the Bunny Ranch. I heard that he did that.
Dan Haggerty, who was Grizzly Adams, of course, on NBC for many
right.
years.
He's done many weddings here and at the Bunny Ranch.
I'm shocked that you weren't invited. I mean, that seems to be kind of like a slap in the face. I mean, they met.
It is. Peter, I agree with you. It is a slap in the face. You know, right in front of me, she told him, she says, I'm going to keep working here, and I'm going to keep sleeping with Dennis, which I only slept with her a couple times. It wasn't like, you know, a couple times was enough for me. But she made it sound like we were having a relationship and that we were good sex buddies, and it just wasn't that way. But she told him that right in front of the guy, and he agreed to it. So, well, that's okay.
So if I get this straight, now that he's married, it's and you weren't invited to the wedding, it seems like you've lost a bunny, and would it be fair to say you've also lost a client, or is he still coming back?
We lost a good client. We lost a bunny, and who knows? It's just absolutely crazy. The girls are all shocked. Willow's sitting over here shaking her head like this is nuts.
Well, that's something else. Well, I also mentioned in the introduction that there was another story involving, well, a former U.S. president. This is a story that made the New York Daily News back on Sunday, March the 2nd. There's a picture of Bill Clinton and two of your ladies of the evening. How did that come about?
Well, I got invited to an event, the United for Humanity event in Los Angeles. And this is an event where a lot of celebrities were going to get awards. It was a fundraiser dinner. And I was invited as a celebrity guest. And actually helped them sell tickets. The tickets were $4,000 apiece. So we put it on the bunnyranch.com website, a banner on there, and sent out a newsletter to all of our loyal customers and said, please come to the event. So I need to pick a couple girls to go. So I knew Barbie Girl, who's on the HBO Cat House series, and a centerfold that works for us. She's a huge Bill Clinton fan. Young girl, but a rock star type. She thinks he's a rock star. And there was another girl at the Love Ranch who now has moved to the Bunny Ranch named Ava. Now, Ava Adora. Now, not only was she a Bill Clinton fan, but she had also been involved in some humanitarian causes in Nepal, Beijing, and someplace in Malaysia and Indonesia. She was going and working with
people in regards to safe sex, malaria, things like that, teaching the country how to deal with these things.
Dennis, you know, it could be said that everyone who works for you is in the humanitarian business, really.
Well, our girls are humanitarians. Yes. Willow's sitting here shaking her head. Like, yes, I am. Yes, you are, darling. And so we went. And we went on the red carpet. We got our credentials. We were sent by security, sent to the red carpet, spent 20 minutes, maybe 5,000 photographs. Every news agency was there. Went inside. The girls started having cocktails. Bill Clinton comes in with the security, with the Secret Service. Now, these girls had no interest in Robert De Niro, Sean Penn, Jane Fonda, Demi Moore, Demi Lovato, Alicia Keys, Selena Gomez, and the list is a mile long. But they wanted to meet Bill Clinton. I said, come on, let's go down there. So we walked down to the front of the stage where he was, and he stopped for a minute to say hello to a couple people. And Barbie Girl came up and said, Mr. President, I'm Barbie Girl from the HBO show, Cat House, and I'm a Bunny Ranch girl, and I'm your biggest fan. Can I get a picture? And he says, come on, girls. And so the girls went up there, and he was generous enough to take that wonderful photo. And then Ava said, thank you, Mr. President. And he said, it's always a pleasure taking pictures with pretty girls. And that was kind of the extent of it. And I had Ron Jeremy with me also, and Ron shook his hand. I stayed in the back because I like Clinton, and I just didn't want to cause him any problems having a picture taken with me. So anyway, the picture went worldwide now. It's viral. Everybody's talking about it. You know, everybody from TMZ to the London Mail, you name it, they're on it. And Tokyo papers, and Bill and the hookers. And so it's gone viral.
I'm sure Hillary must be pleased.
No, she must be not pleased at all. He's going to cut her off again. She's going to cut him off. They tell him, go to the Bunny Ranch, Bill. You want some hips, lips, and fingertips, get on out to the Bunny Ranch.
Now, you have a naked woman in the room with you right now. And every time I talk to you...
Naked with the brightest silver pumps you've ever seen.
Okay.
It's an amazing sight. Now, imagine a tall, dark-skinned blonde. Look her up on the site, Willow.
And
you need to be looking at who you're talking to.
And that's the bunnyranch.com. So we just got about a minute here, so I just want to set
the... Hello to her.
Hello?
Hello, Willow. How are you?
Hi, I'm doing good. How are you?
Oh, just tickety-boo. I was about to ask Dennis if what temperature he keeps the rooms at the Bunny Ranch, because every time I talk to him, he seems to be surrounded by naked women, and I'm just wondering, it's not too cold or too hot, is it?
Oh, we're always at full attention. It's a little cool.
It's a little cool. Yeah, I bet he likes it that way.
Yeah.
So, how do you feel about these other ladies getting their picture taken with a former president? Would you like to get your picture taken with the former president?
Yeah, of course. We deserve it. We pay taxes. We're good girls.
There you go. There you go. No complaints at all. Thank you very much, Willow.
Yeah. All right.
Let me speak to Dennis one more time.
Imagine that, sitting in my office, a beautiful naked girl like that with pumps on.
Yeah, yeah.
Bright red toes, bright red fingers. Oh, my God.
Living the dream, aren't you, Dennis? Living the dream.
I am living the dream, my friend. And who knows what's going to happen when we hang up here, Peter. I'm feeling a little excited right now.
Well, in that case, I better let you go. I'll ask you the question that I asked. I'll ask you the question that I asked Willow, though, and that is, every time I talk to you, it seems to be you're surrounded by at least one, sometimes more than one, naked woman, and I'm just wondering, what temperature do you keep the rooms at there?
78.
78. Okay, that's...
Keep it nice and warm.
That's not bad.
We keep it nice and warm. I encourage the girls to take their clothes off. I mean, nothing better than sitting around a bar with 40 hot girls of every nationality and they're half naked. And the warmer we keep it, the less clothes they're going to wear. We'd never keep it cold in here.
Okay, Dennis. People can go to the website and find out more information. The website is bunnyranch.com, correct?
It is, Peter, and you're always a fun guy, and thank you very much, and there's no business like home business, Peter.
Always a pleasure to talk to you, Dennis. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Oh, man, Dennis is always a hoot to talk to. That's Dennis Hoff, the owner of the Moonlight Bunny Ranch in Nevada. You can see his HBO show, Cat House. Check your local listings. You can also visit my website at thestufffile.com. Go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0238, and you'll find links to Dennis's website. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Time now for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the Strange Things Adults Do. The Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
The surveillance video at the Shambles Bar in Chicago showed that an attempted break-in one night in January went awry when the unidentified perp removed the front entrance lock but gave up and fled seconds later when he couldn't open the door, which he was shown furiously pulling on, oblivious to the fact that it was a push door. I mean, why would a burglar repeatedly pull on a door that clearly had to be pushed to be opened? One reason, and one reason only, he's an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program, number 0238. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0238. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder, and don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Media and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Any rebroadcast of this copywritten program in whole or in part without the express written consent of... Oh, God, who the hell are we kidding? Who's going to steal this show? God, who writes this stuff? Holder, what a kidder.